This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, folks. This is Basma Farhat from the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can listen to our live shows or past shows on iPod Ready Archives. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. So just go to the website for details. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. It's our pleasure to have with us tonight Rebecca Vilkommersen. And I do have to admit, I had to watch my P's and Q's with that one. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure and our honor. Rebecca is the new director of the Jewish Voice for Peace, whose mission statement is to work together for peace, social justice, equality, human rights, respect for international law, and the U.S. foreign policy based on these ideals. The JVP opposes any anti-Jewish, anti-Muslim, and anti-Arab bigotry and oppression. Jewish Voice for Peace seeks an end to the Israeli occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, security and self-determination for Israelis and Palestinians, a just solution for Palestinian refugees based on the principles established in international law, and an end to the violence against civilians, and peace and justice for all peoples in the Middle East. Now, that's a mouthful, and I appreciate that. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Rebecca, there are a few statements that you made in your bio that I'd like to delve into, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
One of them was, like many people, because of my emotional attachment to Israel, I have been reluctant to examine the story of Israel making the desert bloom. The heroic wars Israel fought as the underdog, the duplicitousness of the Arabs, never Palestinians. Tell our listeners, please, why it takes so much for a people, a good people, in most areas of their lives to reject the very ideals that seem to apply in their lives, but not when it comes to the Palestinian question.
Well, I think that is absolutely the most important question that you could possibly ask, and I can relate my own, and whenever I talk to someone who sort of has had their eyes open about the situation in Israel and Palestine, I always ask them exactly that question. What made you finally be able to look at this issue in a way that made you see the reality? Because I wish that there was some key that said you can get people to it by doing X, Y, Z, because that would make our job a lot easier. But I think for many of us, and when I say us, I mean Jewish Americans, we were brought up many of us, in very strongly Zionist households, and you have to do some pretty strong intellectual and emotional work in order to come to a place of understanding the politics. In my own case, I recognized the quote you read back, and it was sort of a story I wrote several years ago about how I came to my political consciousness. In my own case, I had already was already coming from a left perspective on other issues. I was actually an activist at the time around welfare and homelessness and housing issues. And what I realized was that if I was going to be consistent about my political values, if I thought that all people should be equal, which is certainly a bedrock value at least, if not the reality in the United States, then I had to apply that to everywhere, including Israel and Palestine. So for me, it was exactly as you said. It was a matter of figuring out that I had to be consistent across the board on every issue, not just pick and choose. But I don't know exactly why it is so hard for so many people to get past that. There's a phrase for it that people use a lot now called PEP, Progressive Accept Palestine, because it's such a widespread phenomena.
One of the other statements that you made, Rebecca, was it's a pleasure to struggle with other Jews to live the ethics that I associate with Judaism in the fight for justice in Israel and Palestine. you know, this, can you define that kind of a struggle internally? I mean, I know as a, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but I am a Palestinian American.
Yeah,
And a peace activist as well, associated with many organizations, including helping to start the Palestinian office, which is the only Palestinian American designated to Palestinian affairs in the United States. And what is the struggle? I know what our struggle is. I'm trying to define the struggle between one Jewish American and another as relationship to ethics.
Right. Right.
What is
the
struggle?
Yeah, I love that question, too. I think, you know, there's a couple things. The first thing I think that's important for us to keep in mind, I mean, that particular essay I was writing, you know, very much as a Jew speaking to other Jews, but I think it's very important for us as part of a larger movement, because as a very large movement in solidarity with Palestine, and the Jewish piece of it is a small and, I think, important part, but it's certainly not in no way even the leading part. It's a part. And so I think it's very important as Jews that we be humble about, you know, sort of our place in the movement and the importance of Palestinian voices in the movement, and to be aware of some of the larger, you know, I think that one of the reasons that the Jewish wing of the movement is important is because anti-Semitism is so often used as a way to suppress dissent about this issue, and so in that sense, Jewish voices are important. But on the other hand, there's also something that we need to recognize about America, which is that is anti-Arab racism, and that Jewish voices may also be taken more seriously than Palestinian or Arab voices, and so that we as Jews in the movement have to be very aware of that and make sure that we're not taking up more space than we should be in this particular struggle. So I just wanted to put that as a context. I think in terms of the struggle that I was talking about in that piece, you know, I think growing up, I was very proud of the role that Jewish Americans had played in civil rights struggles in American history. And I think there's a, you know, I think it's a shame, basically, that in today's world, so many Jewish Americans are not playing that role, and in fact are in some cases playing the opposite role in various different ways. And so it's not that I think that there's something inherent to Judaism that is more moral. Absolutely to the contrary. You know, obviously I think any religion or any people will have good people and bad people, but I think there is a beautiful stream of Judaism that is very conscious of ethics and is very aware of the need to have solidarity with other oppressed peoples of the world, and that's the stream that I want to tap into in my own life.
The JVP works towards a solution for Palestinian refugees, the refugee problem, based on the principles established in international law, Rebecca. But whenever we speak, and oftentimes I have spoken to various groups and spoken on the topic, and invariably when we mention international law, the statement comes up, what is international law? What does that mean to us? It means nothing to us. And I wonder, how do we apply international law, and are we talking Geneva Convention, rules of conduct and engagement? Are we talking the United Nations, which Israel is a signatory of? Which laws are we talking about, and how do we enforce them in a country that, you know, a lot of times tells us what does international law mean?
Right. I mean, I think we're talking about the several UN resolutions that have called for a right of return for Palestinian refugees, and we're also talking about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which calls for the right, you know, which mentions as a right the right of people to return to their home countries. How you enforce that is obviously a very important question that we have not figured out yet. Because if the UN resolutions have passed had binding force, then everyone would be home again already. So I have to say that that's a conundrum that I don't have an exact answer yet, except that I think that by being part of the UN, the U.S., Israel are signatories to the UN, as you mentioned, and so they do have that. We do have at least that framework of international law on our side, which is important to remember and important to remind people of, and that's a potential framework for figuring out the solution to that problem. and it should have both moral and legal weight. The fact that it doesn't yet, I think, points to the need for more, because I think, you know, laws are one thing, and I think, as we all know, powers concede nothing without a struggle, as the saying goes, and so you need some pretty strong organizing on a lot of different pressure points in order to make those principles a reality.
Well, I agree that certainly the resolutions, and as I said, you know, since Israel is a signatory on it, it's often, you know, our big issue as Palestinians is to enforce. And this is something that I've always said. You know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, what is this about? They've been fighting for thousands of years. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the mm-hmm. same things over and again.
Yeah, of course.
And what I base it on, and again, this all goes back to the ethical base that we have. And if we don't implement the law across the board evenly, or as evenly as we possibly can, then I don't think the law is worthy. And I'll tell you
I think the law is a tool. You know, it's a tool. But as you said, the ultimate framework should be ethics and morality. I mean, I think unfortunately, international law is a tool, especially of the more powerful countries. And you think about, you know, why has the U.S., for example, has intervened in some of the European conflicts, but not in some African conflicts, which have had much love for the deaths. I mean, there's political reasons that we as the U.S. pick and choose which fights we get ourselves into and where we've come down on them, and that's quite unfortunate. But I think you're right; that it's very important to bring it back to the ethical.
And for me, it always, you know, apply the law equally, and I think that a lot of our problems would be solved in the region. Which brings us to another issue.
I just want to add, I think, something that JVP, you know, you read that long, long mission statement, and mm-hmm. we recently sort of boil it down to two words, full equality, you know, which is simple. And I think covers a lot. And it's something that Americans can understand. You know, we understand that as citizens, for example, we all should have full and equal rights. So why should it be any different, as you said, applying the law equally?
Well, one of the analogies that you mentioned in that essay and in that statement was how would we feel if we started a nation or a state that only allowed citizenship for Catholic Americans? And
right.
That's exactly what's happening in Israel, and it doesn't even make any sense, really. It is a nonsensical position if it's a democracy, because that's the antithesis of a democracy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and that's again, you know, that goes back to your first question, which is why has it been so hard to get through to Jewish Americans on this issue? And there's a lot of reasons why, but I think, you know, the reality is that Jewish Americans, we grew up, I grew up as a minority in this country, so certainly the fact that my rights as a minority were protected meant a lot to me in my personal experience. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you would think that awareness of being a part of a minority that's protected and has equal rights despite our different ethnicity or any different ethnicity, that would be something that would then be a value. And you know, that's where I hope that we'll be able to turn things around in terms of speaking, in terms of, you know, in terms of equality.
Well, I have some. I already have some questions from our audience, our listeners, and the first one. I will put out the second one because we've already touched a little bit on the United States and its support of the Israeli occupation. Mark in Canada asks, does the guest feel that President Obama can do anything regarding the Israeli-Palestine issue, or do you think he is just talk?
I think that he made a decent speech in Cairo, but that since then, actions certainly speak louder than words. And I think the words that he has uttered that raised people's hopes that he would actually do something have turned out to be quite harmful. As one of my colleagues said, you know, the first thing you learn as a parent is don't make empty threats. And I think that's exactly what he did. He proved, unfortunately, and I say it with deep regret because I certainly was a supporter of his, but I, you know, what I see happening is that it's actually been quite clarifying to see that despite the words that have been spoken, this administration is not doing anything differently than any previous administrations. And I think it sort of proves the point that we need to look for other avenues rather than these governmental, in quotes, peace processes that have been going on now for decades while, in the meantime, things get worse and worse and worse and worse on the ground in Palestine.
Well, as far as I this is something that I believe that the peace process is no more than a war happening. It's time for peace and no longer a time for peace process, because the, during the process, you know, so much tragedy has occurred. My other thing is I agree with you. I have to agree with you, because we have a president now that has been talking change, has been talking peace, and is acting war. And
right.
That, unfortunately, is very tragic. I have another question from Ed in Oregon, Rebecca. And he asked, do you think the compulsory military service in Israel is entrenching the hard line against the Palestinians?
You know, there's a very interesting story about, in quotes, compulsory military service. In fact, right now, just under 50% of eligible kids, you really have to say, because they're 17, 18 when they go in, are actually serving in the military. So I think Israel sort of actually likes to promote an ethos of universal service in the military, and that this is our children are the ones who are doing this. You know, from the Israeli perspective, that's what they do. In reality, first of all, of course, the 20% of the Israeli population who are actually Palestinian do not serve in the army. The ultra-Orthodox do not serve in the army. And many secular people at this point actually do not serve in the army because they get out in various ways, you know, through medical exemptions, mental health exemptions. A very, very small, brave few get out, you know, refuse to serve and spend time in jail each year. And then additionally, you have a very small number of extreme right-wing settlers who refuse to serve these days because they don't want to have to expel Jews from West Bank settlements. So, you know, it's actually only 50% of people who are actually serving in the army, and I think that's actually an interesting number, because it just shows that well, maybe this is too optimistic, but that it's perhaps a more superficial level of support in Israel for military policies than would appear. On the other hand, I absolutely think that it's absolutely true that the propaganda, which the Israeli public certainly believes, you know, which talks about the soldiers as our children and our children, you know, it's always about our children who are serving in the army, absolutely has a negative impact in terms of the militarism of the country, which is absolutely breathtaking. You know, and I think we saw that to the worst effect in last year's attack on Gaza, where the kind of firepower they used was just absolutely revolting and terrible, and resulted, of course, in ridiculous numbers of civilians being killed. And the doctrine behind it, that was basically that, oh, we can't let any of our children who are soldiers, who are, you know, who are, that's what they're going to the army for, is theoretically is to be in war. But, you know, this idea that, these soldiers are our children and thus we must protect them, it sort of inverts the idea of what an army is, even, has had very, very significant consequences in terms of the way Israel is waging its wars.
That's very interesting. I guess I'd never thought of it in quite that perspective, but I do agree with you on that. I'm going to have to, you know, think about that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
How can our listeners help to create understanding with people who accept the faux media version of the occupation of Palestine by Israel, Rebecca? What do we do?
That's such a great question. I mean, of course, you can go to our website, which is www.jvp.org. Again, that's www.jvp.org. And we have a lot of resources on our site. I would recommend folks to read websites like the Electronic Intifada, like MondoWeiss.net. There's a great blog that's called Shalom Rav by a rabbi who's recently come out against the occupation. No, I would say to become educated, it's very important to know your facts. And then I would say it's a question of engagement in the conversation for folks who want to actually, you know, create chapters and become more involved. Again, to get in touch with JVP is one of the great ways to go. And there's so many great groups out there actually doing work. And, you know, JVP is right for some people, not right for others, and that's great and fine. There's plenty of other great groups to work on. But, you know, I think think people can form groups in their own communities. They can start working on creating relationships with their congressional representatives and just ask them to go visit Gaza and the West Bank. That will be transformative for them. You know, spend some time creating a relationship with your congressional representative and educating them about the subject. Try to have educational events in your place of worship. Get a conversation going in your community.
SamaritansOnlyKnew.org is also an excellent with Allison Weir.
Yeah, that's another great one.
Yeah. What I'd like to ask, and I think this is an important question, especially when in relationship to Jews or Israelis that are supporting the Palestinian, the destruction of the occupation. And this is asked by Carol in Nevada. She asked, does Ms. Vilkemerson receive, and I'm sorry if I'm brutalizing your name, it's like I have to do
it. No, you're doing fine. You're fine.
Thank you. Receive criticism or even hate from other Jews who feel she is anti-Israel, anti-Jewish?
Yeah, that kind of goes with the territory. I've sort of gotten to the place where I can ignore it. I certainly, in terms of what I'm dealing with compared to what lots of other people are dealing with, I can absolutely dismiss it. I had my parents and even my grandmother were harangued in synagogue this year because people had read some of the stuff I said. But I would say overall it's been quite mild. And I actually just spent quite a bit of time in Israel, and I went to demonstrations there, for example, where we had eggs thrown at us and people, trying to physically attack us and spitting on us and all those sorts of things. And that's in Israel proper, let alone to talk about the kind of abuse that Palestinian and international and Israeli activists, if you deal with in the demonstrations, for example, in Bilin or Nilin, and the tear gas and the rubber bullets and the live ammunition, to say nothing, of course, of the Palestinians who are simply living life under occupation, which is incredibly violent and terrifying. So, I think of a couple pieces of hate mail are a perfectly good price to pay for the work.
You mentioned that you went to Israel and supported some of the groups there. Do you have any sister groups in Palestine also that you are working with?
I actually spent a few years in Israel because my husband is Israeli, and I worked mostly, and because I was based in Tel Aviv, I worked mostly through Israeli groups, and they were, really some amazing activists, groups like the Anarchists Against the Wall, Ta'ayush, which does partner work with groups in the South Hebron Hills. Most of the groups that I worked with in Palestine don't have names per se. It's the Village Committee of Nialin, it's the Village Committee of Bilin, it's the Village Committee of Tawani. So I guess the short answer to that is no, we don't really have any, and I think the Gaza Mental Health Center and Mental Health Gaza Mental Health Center in Gaza. There's a few groups here and there that we work with informally. Right now we're working with Stop the Wall to try to help get Mohammed Othman, who was detained recently. He's an activist from Jayus who was detained because he's been advocating for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and he's right now being held in administrative detention. So we've been working with Stop the Wall on a campaign to save him and to put pressure on the U.S. government, to pressure the Israeli government. So, in an episodic kind of way, we work with different groups, but apart from that, I don't really have particular names.
Mm-mm. Well, I'd like to ask you, since you have been in Israel and you have worked with some of these groups there, helping to support the end of the occupation, and you obviously, as a Jewish American and someone that has been in the area and heard and seen perhaps and read some of the horrific events that take place at the hands of radical settlers that have made life literally unbearable for Palestinians in the West Bank.
Yeah.
What are the peace movements doing to help bring either light to it, to end it, to stop it?
Well, I think there's two different things. There's one thing which is, quite extraordinary. I've never met more dedicated activists in my life as I met in Palestine and in Israel. And when I say that, I'm speaking about internationals, and I'm speaking about Palestinians, and I'm speaking about Israelis, people who, you know, are really killing themselves, throwing themselves, literally banging their heads against the wall, you know, the wall, you know, day after day, week after week, you know, putting their bodies in front of homes, trying to keep them from being destroyed, trying to put their bodies in front of olive trees to keep them from being uprooted, helping people get through checkpoints, you know, trying to get soldiers to treat Palestinians with some modicum of humanity. I mean, there's a million different ways and a million different kinds of immediate response that's happening on the ground all the time. Thousands of people really working on this stuff day and night, and I find it just extraordinary and inspiring. But that's the sort of, that a lot of that is very reactive. You know, it's like you're there and everything is so urgent and, you know, it's life or death all the time, and so you really end up sort of throwing your body into the breach a lot of the time. But I think one of the things that's been most exciting that's happened in the last year is really the rise of in support for the BDS movement, for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, because that's, you know, a people's movement, a tried and true tactic that's been used many different times in history. Obviously in South Africa is the most obvious parallel, but of course you can also think of Cesar Chavez in California, and you can think of Gandhi in India, and you can think of the Montgomery bus boycott. You know, there's tons of examples of sort of righteous and noble efforts by people when governments have failed to change policies. And I think that's one of the most exciting things that's happening inside Palestine, you know, the growth of the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions Committee, inside Israel, where there's a group called Boycott From Within that's supporting that, and in Europe, where the movement is growing very strongly, and even in the U.S., where we're quite behind those other places, but it's also starting to become stronger.
Well, I certainly agree with you on the issue of divestments. I think it's a powerful tool, and I'm hoping that it really gains a lot of momentum. Unfortunately, when the supporters of divestment, these issues and the sanctions, get arrested by Israel, it kind of hinders the process a little bit of free speech, and it really is the antithesis of democratic society that Israel claims it is. And it, you know, but again, we have a lot
of strong news.
Exactly,
and I think we need to keep talking about that in the United States. You know, keep talking about, like, is this a democracy? Is this a democracy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I do see in American discourse a change that's happened, especially since Gaza. I think there's more openness to a discussion of Israel as a country like any other country that has to be held to the same standards of any other any other country. You know, going back again to your framing, which I think is right, of, you know, that we all should be held to the same standard as individuals and as countries. You know, that there has been more willingness, some recognition of how much Israel is straying from that standard. And so I think the more we're able to lift up those examples and sort of put chinks in the armor of, you know, Israel being this only democracy in the Middle East, the more progress we'll make.
There's a question from William in Oregon. Well, a statement and a question. And William says, I think this guest is truly brave and honest and would like to compliment her. Is she supportive of George Galloway or the group that tried to go to Gaza by ship?
Thank you, first of all. I appreciate that. You know, JVP, I personally am very supportive of the, I think that was the Free Gaza, the boats he was talking about. I personally am very supportive of it. I don't think JVP became involved, again, because it was a European effort, more of a European effort. We're supporting we've endorsed the Gaza, the March on Gaza that's going to be happening, at the end of December. And so we are, you know, supporting it in that sense, but it's not one of our major projects. We really try to focus our work on changing U.S. policy, because we think that our status as American citizens and as Jewish American citizens, and the fact that the United States plays such a huge role in allowing Israel to maintain its power in this conflict, that we need to keep on focusing on the role of the U.S., the role of the incredible amounts of military aid that the U.S. is giving to Israel, you know, that's our piece of it.
Now, this is a personal question. I know that as an activist myself for over 20 years of my life, many times there's conflict in my own family. How do you handle the kind of conflict that you obviously would have to encounter based on the subject matter that you have delved into?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think I'm very lucky in that my parents, I come from a very you know, a family, you know, I think there's a generational difference. I think for folks who came of age Jews, especially who became of age post-Holocaust, those who see Israel as a refuge, it's very hard for them to let go of that conception, and I respect that. And I think overall with my parents, you know, I think I went through a stage about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, when I would fight with them constantly. And over time, as I was able to engage with them more and have, you know, and have respect for their feelings and not just be angry with them, I was able to make more progress. And the place where I actually finally made the most progress was when I was living in Israel, and I was able to, you know, and I was able to write them about my experiences in the West Bank and seeing the checkpoints, you know, firsthand and being tear gassed firsthand, and they couldn't do anything but accept, you know, the reality of the facts that I myself had witnessed and been a part of. And so that was when I finally made the most progress with them, interestingly enough. And I think, you know, ultimately I'm lucky in that, you know, they love me and they respect me and they are proud of me and proud of the fact that I'm coming at the work I'm doing with passion and commitment. And so I've had a lot less problems than a lot of other people I know, because it's a very, very fraught topic in many families.
Yes, it can be. I know that. I have a lot of friends that are Jewish activists and support us as Palestinians, and I know they go through a lot of struggle oftentimes. And some of it is just heart-wrenching, because it's almost like giving up everything you ever believed and were ever taught. And unfortunately, that's a very, very terrifying thing for a lot of people. I have a friend that his favorite saying is, "If I could just get into the synagogues."
Oh, it's so true. It's so true.
That is such a wall of I don't know what, that is impenetrable by any Palestinian peace activist, even if it's just to tell them our side.
Right.
And it is impenetrable.
Yeah. That is true even for Jewish activists, I would say, largely. We have a small, intrepid band of members within GBP who have committed themselves to just that, you know, who are synagogue members, who have been slowly over the years, you know, using the social capital and as members of synagogues, you know, and in most cases, of course, quite left synagogues, because, you know, that are already synagogues that are relatively on the fringe of mainstream synagogues. You know, it's very hard. I agree that it's very hard, and it's one of the things that we grapple with, of should we spend our time there in the synagogues where it's going to be hardest, or should we go out to more unaffiliated groups, in unaffiliated individuals who it might be easier to get the message out to. But I do think it's really important to keep trying with the synagogues, and I think, you know, one thing that we try to do when we have an invitation to a synagogue is, if we can, to bring a Palestinian activist along, so that they're not just hearing the Jewish perspective but are hearing the Palestinian perspective as well. We've not always managed to do that, but we try to do that. And, you know, I can just think of so many examples. I know the synagogue in my neighborhood, the map they have of Israel that they use in their Hebrew school where they're teaching kids doesn't have the green line on it. You know, so it's so deeply entrenched. And, you know, I know so many stories of people hearing these terrible sermons, you know, on the highest holy days of the year. It's just, it's very, very, very frustrating and difficult. Mm-hmm. And the few people who are able to do it, I applaud them, because it is such hard, thankless work. On the other hand, when you get somewhere, it's a huge accomplishment. You really do get somewhere. And I think that's where groups like Rabbis for Human Rights come in. I think, you know, actually my parents, I remember one of their turning points was hearing Rabbi Arik Asherman from Rabbis for Human Rights, who's an extraordinary activist, was visiting in the United States. And, you know, it was easier for them because they heard it from a rabbi, and there was something about that made it easier for them. And, you know, I can sort of understand that.
Well, I can too. I mean, I have to say that I understand, because here, even in the United States, and we have the same issue now. We are being thoroughly disappointed by a lot of what's happening in our government. And so what do? We just chuck it all and say, give up everything, everything that we've ever known, everything that we've ever loved, admired about the United States. Was it real? Was it a fallacy? We don't know. So I understand what they're going through to a certain extent.
Right.
And maybe one day we too will be able to go hand in hand, and I will be as free to enter into the territories. Thank you very much.
Inshallah.
Rebecca, it's been a pleasure having you, and indeed you are a very brave woman, and we as Palestinians appreciate you. Thank you very
thank you.
Much
thank
for
you
your
so
work.
Much. Those words really mean a lot.
And
Thank you.
Anybody that's interested, please visit
www.thejewishvoiceforpeace.org. That's Rebecca's site. She's the executive director and a worthy and honorable organization. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you. Bye-bye.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and Wicca spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The People Speak, and just want to tell you, our next week's guest is Ellen Brown, author of Forbidden Medicine. Is effective non-toxic cancer treatment being suppressed? We also, our upcoming show on the 22nd of December will be with Ralph Nader, one of our all-time favorites, and I'm looking forward to interviewing them both, looking forward to seeing you all with us and hearing your comments. Thank you very much, and have a great week. We'll see you next week at the People Speak Radio. Bye-bye.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream Water.